This week on RSPB Update, Mod Sponge joins us to discuss the fractured staff changes and his RuneScape experience featuring PVM, balancing, and pizza. We then provide first-hand experience on this week's changes while reconciling poll results. This is RSPB Update, episode 938, recorded Thursday, June 8th, 2023. Mod Sponge behind the crowd. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, it's Fractured Staff of Armadill and Anime Dead Changes. That's an entire beast in itself. Welcome, Board Tannis.
Thank you, Shane, but it's the week after.
It's the week after?
Yeah, it's the week after the big announcement. Like,
there's the Necromancy announcement. Yeah, we're still hiding from that.
Hustle and energy and, like, there's...
People's pocketbooks are expanding.
The game is popping, man. It's popping.
Yeah, and, you know, it underscores why you need to do that thing, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Why you need those kind of updates. Bears is also joining us. Welcome, Bears.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a long time. Yeah, I'm excited to be back.
It has. I think we last heard from you probably around Zamorak time last year, if I remember correctly. So it's
been
a while.
Yeah, that sounds right. Been traveling and not been near my PC, so been hard to reach.
I've been trying to make these schedules work, but it was important to get you on this week because you've actually been out doing some PVM and experiencing the new Fractured Staff and Anime Dead changes. From that perspective, in addition to everything else, but you guys probably might be reading ahead in the show notes, and that's good because also this week, Mod Sponge will be joining us for another installment of Behind the Crown. That's our series where we get to know a specific J-Mod, talk to them about how they got to Jagex, what they do at Jagex, and learn more about their hobbies and whatnot. Related to RS or otherwise, and we got to do that with Mod Sponge this week, and as well, we did have an opportunity to talk to him in relation to these Fractured Staff of Armadill changes, so we got his perspective on that, that we'll be bringing to you right after we dive into the changes and go through some of the rotations and DPM numbers that we're experiencing on this, but of course, if you want to follow along, full show notes at update.show. You can find me in game at Shane12088. Tannis is at Tannis 79. And Bears, where are you at these days? What's your RSN?
It is DJ Moore.
Okay. So, you'll have to explain that one to me later, but there you go, folks. we also have Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord and the Friends Chat Bits Bytes. But Fractured Staff of Armadill changes. Controversial? Yes? No? And I feel like you're the perfect person to ask about this because I sourced one just for testing on the beta server and specifically for that reason. So it's not like I had been using it up until then. But we need to talk to you about this in particular. The changes this week. So give me a quick 30-second rundown of your thoughts as a TLDR.
Absolutely love the change. I mean, what, since the Fractured Staff came out, it's been the top weapon. So it's been a year and a half. I was getting sick of it. Like I was starting to use range more at bosses.
Okay.
It was slightly slower. It's just like you got too used to it. It was so crit-dependent that... You know, sometimes you're dealing a ton of damage. The next time you're doing the same exact rotation, you're doing no damage. Like, it was a little frustrating on that end. So the consistency is nice.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the way I see the change from that perspective is it puts magic into its wheelhouse of, you know, being a solid DPS performer, but it's not in that case where you can, you know, ping pong ball back and forth between doing good and doing okay, and then you know having those just, you know, astounding critical hits. So that is something that I do appreciate from my readings into this. Tannis, do you have any thoughts before we dive into the actual changes this week?
You know, I Yeah, here's my thought. Where can I purchase said staff? Because I cannot afford that thing, man. I mean,
well, you're gonna have to gather more bones and then start going to PVM.
Dude, I'm telling you. Well, hey, that's the good thing, right? The bosses that are popping off are like the only bosses that I can do. So,
hey. More on that later. What he's talking about, folks. More on that later. You might have an idea based on this if you've listened to the podcast before about Tanis's money-making emporiums and all that. But Fractured Staff of Armadil changes focused around the special attack. So the buff on the player no longer fires an additional auto attack after landing a critical hit. Instead, it will trigger a time strike, which deals 60 to 120% ability damage, which of course averages out to 90%. And with that, critical hits caused by time strikes do not trigger further time strikes. Okay. And, you know, that feels simple around the edges. It does. But the proof is in the pudding, as you said, Bears, that this just brings a whole new level of consistency to what we're seeing with the weapon and the special attack here. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the thing that has been said about this is that this effectively moves the Fractured Staff to a weapon that becomes your tier 95 spec weapon and what you swap to when you're doing four tick auto attacking, right?
Yeah. I mean, those two things you just read off, patch notes, those are obviously the two big ones where, you know, not being able to fire an auto attack and instead being now a time strike. It doesn't sound like a big deal, but like not being able to get your blood barrage ability in there kind of takes away some healing.
Right. Okay.
Which is not too much. To
right.
Be honest.
And it's important that we focus on both sides of this because every PVMer I've talked to, and maybe this is just my circle of people that I have around, have said that, you know, this change is okay. And we actually like this change, which is contrary to what the general community at large perspective is, but more on that later. Are there any other downsides that you see this week after playing around with it? And folks, for just to be clear, Bears, we're talking about bosses like Solak, like AOD that you did this week on these. So not so very high level PVM.
Yeah, one of the things I love about the change is you could argue it's a nerf. You could argue it's a buff. Like, it's kind of in that general area where it's actually a really good change. It's not a nerf that people hate. It's not a buff that people hate. So I think they did a really good job with it. But yeah, like, I mean, at Solak, when you get the bombs falling down on you, you usually spec, switch to Blood Barrage, and you can sit there and soul split the whole time and just keep up your health. Now you have to prayer flick a little bit more, maybe eat a little bit of food. It's really not that big of a difference. The bigger one is at AOD. First off, P1 is usually, if everyone's doing the same pre-rotation setup, it should only take about 5 GCDs for you to skip the phase. Now it's taking like 6 to 7. Again, it's not a big deal. It's a couple extra abilities, not even. But the bigger issue is once all the minions spawn, before you just get them all under AOD, switch to Blood Barrage, and just let all your crits just keep going and going and going. And, you know, they're critting on all these mini bosses, or all the minions, and it just keeps going. It's
crazy.
Yeah,
because it could, because if you're casting one of the barrages, it could activate multiple times, right? And it was just a recursive thing they took
off
away
of
in
that
the week. Yeah.
Whole time, too. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but again, kind of got sick of it after a little bit.
And I think that's the thing that people are upset about. And, you know, folks, let's be honest about this. Correct us if we're wrong. Tell us if we're in the wrong wheelhouse on this. We like to know. It's that dopamine hit of seeing all of those things get hit, get iced, get blood barraged, and then you heal yourself up. And then you also, with that, just see these huge amounts of damage coming in, and then it hits again with the crit just once on that. And I'm betting it's that loss of that AoE is what is bothering people who say this is a fairly substantial nerf and it's not as strong as it was. The people who see it from that perspective.
Yes, I would think so too. So I've been doing a lot of 5-man AOD, and what we just kind of did, instead of having 5 people using mage, we just switched to 1 person using range. They throw on chins, and it was about the same. It really wasn't that big of a difference. So we were able to adjust it. Like I think I mentioned before our show, like we're getting about 10 seconds slower kills, which is less than we were expecting. So we're pretty thrilled about it.
Yeah, and then I'd imagine once you slip into the new rotations and whatnot, you'll get that down refined even more. And I mean, at the end of the day, we're just looking at you know you're mentioning AOD, and granted there are no official high scores for that one, but you could start to see where that becomes an issue if you are score pushing for that. And once again, that's something I think that needs to be considered as a retroactive ad for a bunch of the PVM bosses is, you know, score pushing like we have for Zamorak in some way or another. But I'd imagine it's just a question of resources for getting something like that in. And then with that, you get that measurement that people like in terms of, you know, are we able to consistently hit these times, so on and so forth. So I was also going to ask you with this, do you have any ideas about what you were at before for DPM and where you're at now in terms of, you know, just DPM numbers on this?
Sadly, I don't. I don't have rune metrics, but I mean, just my sort of idea of how much it changed was, so in the 5-man AOD, you need each to do 180,000 damage.
Right.
And that would take about 5 global cooldowns. Now it's about 6 or 7.
Okay.
Like, it's really not too big of a difference.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, the global cooldown is 1.8 seconds or 3 ticks, right?
Yep.
Okay. So you said it would take an additional 2 global cooldowns then?
Yep.
So then with that, you're looking at an additional 3.6 seconds based on those rotations that we were looking at with this then. And when you factor that in terms of the grand scale of DPM, we're probably not looking at too many changes from that perspective, which I think makes sense from a balancing a numbers point of view. And then from there, you get back to the point, well, it's a question of how it feels, and in particular, the dopamine hits of the raw AOE and whatnot. But one thing that we do need to talk about with this is that this has put the emphasis for magic rotations heavily on greater concentrated blast. So what does, in your view, what does the rotation look like now for this? And we'll throw this in the show notes for people who want to read it after, but what does the rotation for one of these post-fracture staff changes look like?
Yep, so well, keep in mind we are still working with this, trying to figure out what is actually the best, but this is just kind of our rough idea to start. You know, you sunshine, adrenaline pot, tsunami, staff spec, those are interchangeable. Then you build up probably with the greater concentrated blast, omni power right after that, wild magic, greater concentrated blast again, into a guthic staff, into a 4-tick tendril, so you're doing it the whole time. And then from there, you either create a concentrated blast, guthic staff, until you can't anymore, or you throw in a fix in there.
That's actually not too complicated a rotation when you mention it that way, minus the 4-ticking part for people who don't know how to 4-tick, if I must say so myself.
Yeah, it's actually been pretty simple. Now, it is slightly different than the whole just spam Armandale battle staff meta that we were just in. But it's really not too much different.
No. And it does put that reliance on greater concentrated blast and really puts magic into that crit space of where they wanted it to be. Which, you know, I think is a good thing. People might say otherwise, but when you start looking at this at the end of the day, would you say that it almost makes it a little bit easier to understand compared to where we were at before, just removing all the variances and whatnot in this?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of tough to have a consistent rotation because, you know, sometimes your Omnipower crits 3 out of 4 times, sometimes it would crit 4 out of 4 times, and then some of those crits would turn into more crits, and that just leads to more adrenaline
right.
from Tsunami. So it was, like, kind of hard to get
Or you could get a zero, right?
Consistent. Yep, exactly. So you just kind of never knew where your crits would land. So, yeah, I'm excited to keep playing with this and seeing what the actual rotation will be.
Where do you feel like you're going to gain the most benefit out of the new staff changes? Interesting question, I know, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because, we just kind of spoke about how it's going to do technically less damage. It's going to be not going to heal you as much. But personally, I just think it's more fun right now. And maybe that's because it's just shiny and new. But yeah, I don't know. With only having tried it too much at AOD and Solak, I've really enjoyed it at AOD. And I was kind of done with AOD before this change.
Okay.
And now it's really gotten me back into it. So I think AOD is going to be my go-to.
Nice. And you also got the arena graphical updates too from Mod Black Witch and Mod Alex in terms of the lighting, which was
it's been pretty nice.
Yeah. All right. Tanis, any questions on that before we move on to the P word?
No. Okay. No question.
All right. Of course, people are wondering about the poll because, you know, they just went on this. We learned last Friday they were going to go on this, and the question was, well, hey, the polls, you know, 75-80% of the people said, hey, no, this is bad, don't. Tanis, you and I knew this was the way this was going to go.
Uh-huh.
And I want to read from Mod Doom's Reddit post here on this, and this was the most interesting post that he made in the comments here. There's a whole bunch others. I think he made 12 to 14 posts in replies on this. So once again, putting his head on the line on the subreddit. He said, I'm not sure that a poll fails at all in this instance. A sizable chunk of players voted before even getting hands-on, which sort of undermines the purposes of polls. But that's neither here nor there. It was a chance for players to get hands-on, get a feel for the adjustments. Ultimately, the feedback we did glean validated that it was in the right place. It's a good step towards a better overall design space, as Mod Sponge has said before, and as I said in the polls. Remember, this is Mod Doom talking. He says, we'll continue to monitor it, and there's the potential for smaller patches if it seems necessary. The point raised is fair, that perhaps the poll wasn't the right fit for this sort of adjustment. It wasn't the first time that we, and especially I, have done something like this in a long time. So we can certainly think about our approach for future betas like this one. End.
Well,
I mean, okay, we knew it was going to go this way. We knew people voted on that in the poll. The week the beta and the changes announced drop, I talked to you, Bears, I talked to David, I talked to Thaxi, I looked at what other people in the community were saying, like the RS guy and so on and so forth, and the general consensus among all of you guys was that this thing was in the right place. So I was wondering where exactly this community sentiment was coming from on this, and I think this underscores why RS3 probably can't have guaranteed content pulls, if I'm saying so myself at this point.
Well, luckily they could determine that it was BS too. And honestly, I gotta give Mod Doom credit. That's as forceful as I have ever heard any JMod, especially community manager, be with just the bullshit that goes on sometimes that we know. A poll is super biased in one way or another, or has flaws in, I mean, that's pretty much putting it on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's a world where some of us would like to see changes come to game like we have in old school for RS3 with polls, but you got to iron out these things here and realize that if things are going to be swung in this way, is that necessarily the right way to go on this? So I'll be curious to see if there's more betas and if there's more polls on those betas, because I think we've proven with this that the betas work in terms of providing sentiment. Bears, I forgot to ask you, did you have a chance to play on the beta at all when this dropped?
I logged in, spent about 20 minutes kind of playing around, and it was super laggy.
Right, because they were using a German world.
Yeah, it was kind of tough to mess around with and play too much. But from what I got out of it, I didn't feel like I had enough information to give a vote, so I didn't vote.
Imagine that. Imagine that.
What a novel idea, huh?
But like my first thought was it was fine. I didn't feel confident enough about that to vote.
Yeah, and I mean you, I'm sure, in your background and whatnot, you've seen, you know, evidences of bias and whatnot like that before, and that creeps its way in. So the question I have, and this will be the last question before we move on from the polls and get to Mod Sponge after we talk about Anime Dead, is how do you make a poll then work for RS3?
I don't know if there is a good way. I mean, I remember at one point, I don't know if it was RuneScape or a different video game that I played, but my moderator was like, the reason we don't do polls is because not everyone's a video game designer. Not everyone knows all the ins and outs of these games that, you know, it's just as easy as just giving it to the community. Like, I don't think people know what they want all the time, and they don't know the consequences of what they want. So I don't know. I've never been a big fan of polls and video games. So that's just kind of my opinion.
Yeah, and that's something Mod Sponge is going to go into as well, in particular the wider area of knowledge to know what's on the horizon, what other devs might be working on, so on and so forth. But nonetheless, let's move on to Anime Dead right now. Unless there's anything either of you guys else have to say on Fractured Staff. No?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
We'll leave the rest to Mod Sponge then, because that part was fun, of the Behind the Crown. Anime Dead can't reduce damage by more than 60%, which is down from 75%. The damage reduction uses 25% of your defense level. Previously, it was the third. And the damage reduction now only works against the core damage types of melee, magic, and ranged, and will no longer work against typeless damage, poisons, reflections, or any other bespoke damage types. Tanis, I go to you on this one, since you've been use Anime Dead for Slayer.
Cool.
Where are we at this week?
Well, just as I found in the beta, I did not notice much of a difference mainly because I'm not anywhere where I have to worry about typeless damage. You notice a very, very slight kind of reduction overall because of the going from 75 to 60, but it's really not that much. Not for as strong as Anime Dead is. It hasn't really affected me too much, but like I said, I'm not somewhere too where typeless, like, you know, I'm not at gosh, what's the thing, Cruis, you know, somewhere like that.
Hellware.
Yeah,
and then Bears, we also I think we said Hard Mode Zuck is one, and Phase 7 High Enraged Zamorak is another place you encounter where you would have been experiencing this before, right?
Yep, those would be the two big ones that are slightly harder now. They're both still doable. Just, you know, got to find a different way to mitigate the damage or not even take the damage to begin with.
Yeah. Where, just out of curiosity for you, where do you use the tank armor in Anime Dead personally?
When I'm AFK and stuff like Hellweir.
Okay.
Or Zuck and Sammy. I've yet to go to Zuck. I really wanted to.
Yeah, you need to go back, and you need to get another one of those stones if you don't have any for when Necromancy comes out.
Yeah, that's another good point.
Yeah, and you know, personally for me, the thing I'm not looking forward to do is I actually I actually found the kiln more annoying than Zuck, believe it or not, in terms of the fight on that.
Absolutely.
I'm not looking forward to going back and doing that one with Necromancy when that comes to get that cape, but that's a topic for another day. Okadokes. Anything? I feel like Anime Dead was probably the bigger change here. Am I wrong in saying that? Would you agree?
Depends.
Okay.
I would lean yes, except I think the Fractured Staff is just used more.
Yeah, and it's iconic compared to Anime Dead.
Yeah, but I think if we want to use the word nerf, I think the nerf to Anime Dead would be slightly bigger.
Okay.
But I still don't think it's anything crazy.
Yeah, no. And once again, it comes down to specific use cases and where these things are going to lie. And I'm reading so much into what's to come on the podcast, but just stay tuned on that. All right. Well, we're going to get on to the Behind the Crown right now, but before we do that, I have to thank our Patreon supporters for this week for allowing episodes like this to happen. Our monthly bit from last week got great reviews so far, looking at how we produce the monthly bit and what goes into that. So if you're a Patreon member, check that out, patreon.com/rsbnb. But if you're not, you can sign up and gain access to that one and many others, just like people like Alfie S., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Big Huge Rat, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Ling01, Maniac RS, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., Pernasius, Ricky A., RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL., Scott DS, Shirt Pants, Stub Eve, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, and Zant have all done. Big thank you goes out to these people and more for supporting us at patreon.com/rsbnb. There we offer three tiers of support. For as little as $1 a month, you'll be helping us fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBnb Update. You'll get a mention in the show notes, and of course, you gain access to that entire back catalog of monthly bits, 59 going strong right now. Our most recent one is a meta episode, looking back at 5 years of Patreon support, and in particular, almost that length of time of monthly bits. So big, huge thank you to everybody on that. But we also, of course, have tier lists. We have, in addition to that, specials on Legacy Combat, which blew Tannis's brain last year, and holiday events and so many other good things. All of that for $1 a month at patreon.com/rsbnb. So if you want to help us, sign up there. We also, of course, have a VIP membership tier for $3 a month. We receive a special rank on Discord and special chat channel access and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, we have a $5 a month tier where you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. So once again, a big, big thank you goes out to all of our Patreon supporters for allowing us to do what we do here. It means the world to us. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks.
And with that, we're going to dive into our Behind the Crown special with Mod Sponge. Okay. So we've been talking a lot about the Fractured Staff and Anime Dead this week, and there's some big, big changes. Bears has filled us in on rotations and what he's seen this week. But this week also on the show, we have the one and only Mod Sponge joining us for another installment of Behind the Crown. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to sit down with you because, you know, we're going to have a bit of a look at your own history, how you got to Jagex, how you earned the title of the PVM, one of the PVM J-Mods. We'll see if that's a fair characterization or if there's something else that comes up. So to begin, what we're going to do first is start with a bit of a quick fire round and then discuss the changes to the Fractured Staff and then learn more about you and some of the work you do at Jagex. But before we hit the road here, is there anything you'd like to say to introduce yourself?
I'm Brad. Feel free to call me that if you want. Most commonly known as Mod Sponge, though. So you might see me referred to as either out and about on Discords or whatever, whether that's players talking to me or having a moan. you never know really what you're going to get.
All right. And we dive into these Behind the Crown episodes. And with that, I always like to give a bit of a rundown on projects that you've worked on, you know, Elder God Wars, amongst other things you became known for. But most recently, we have the Fractured Staff of Armadil and Anime Dead Rebalance that just dropped this past week, which...
That's a tasty one, right?
Yeah. Lightning Rod in more than one way, I can imagine. But don't worry. We're going to have a talk on that as we progress through this special. But we're going to begin with the opening quick fire round. What's one fact about you, Mod Sponge, the person that people should be aware of if they're not?
Oh, yikes. One fact. That's hard because I feel like I'm such a boring person.
Nobody's ever truly boring.
Oh, one fact. I'm a massive nerd. I've been playing RuneScape since like 2005. I guess that's somewhat interesting. I think it's around there. I feel like I've spent most of my life playing RuneScape. Yeah, let's go with that.
All right.
And I'm sure more will pop out as I just chat around, right?
And that's always something interesting to talk about with game developers, in particular the game devs at Jagex, because sometimes we look at other games and the game devs completely don't play the game. And I'm sure you guys have a collection of JMods there who don't play. But it feels as though it's a bit out of the realm that most of the people at Jagex, or at least a good portion of them, do play RS.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so, 100%.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel like quite a sizable chunk of the characters at Jagex joined because of RuneScape, right?
Yeah. It's a phenomenon in reality. And, you know, I was just looking at history before we began the episode, and we're recording this on June 6th, which is a day in RuneScape history, of course. So there's that too.
Yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen today at any point, you know. Let's hope history doesn't repeat itself.
Yeah, that was definitely one. And for folks who are not aware, we're talking about the Falador Massacre, of course. So with that, do you have a favorite hobby? Do we put RuneScape in that category? Do we put something else in that category?
Ooh, RuneScape's definitely up there. The only other one really probably is card games. I'm a massive card game nerd.
All right.
Yeah.
So are we talking like poker? Are we talking things like...
Yu-Gi-Oh, Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
I've been playing Yu-Gi-Oh since I was, I don't know, probably the same age I started playing RuneScape, really. And it's never really left my life. Played at a fairly competitive level for quite a while. Not so much recently. Have quite a few premier event tops up there.
We look at those cards at some points, and you know, most people just collect them, but I guess there's the entire game behind them. That's never something that I personally got into, but was it something that was engaging at the time, or how'd you get into the game from just having the cards?
It was something me and my brother, I honestly can't remember. There was a store in our hometown that got in Yu-Gi-Oh specifically, like before it released in English languages. They had it in Japanese. Yeah, and we got into it from there. Where we just make up the rules for the game and the cards, having seen it on TV or whatever.
Okay.
And it kind of just stuck from there, to the point where my brother now has a job in that industry.
So it's a different kinds of games industry then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, fair enough. What's your favorite pizza topping, pizza type? It's always a fun one to ask.
It's a very hard question, though, right? See, I have a pizza oven, so I'm experimenting quite a lot. Right now, it's a bit open-ended, but anything with pepperoni or some kind of spiced meat,
nice,
honey, and a lot of cheese.
Okay, so you kind of tamper off on the spice and you get the sweet. Yeah, okay, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I guess Mod Sponge can, if the PVM side of this doesn't turn out being true, it's Mod Sponge the pizza chef. Or maybe
if the whole RuneScape thing doesn't work, yeah, I'll go and become a pizza dude.
Or maybe you'll make a cooking update one day and add some more pizza types to the game.
I've got ideas.
Right? That's always been something that I've looked at, is that, you know, this is such a food that everybody loves and enjoys, yet there's only a few types in RS. It's one of the perfect expansions, ways to go. Do you have a favorite book or movie?
Again, that's one that changes probably on a weekly basis.
Okay.
Favorite. I would actually say I don't know if I can say it's my favorite, but it's one of them, and it comes to mind right now, is the Scott Pilgrim film.
All right.
Really enjoyed that. Really, really enjoyed that. When I was younger, I found myself coming back to it a lot, especially. I think it just hits that right amount of nerdiness, right?
Right. And I'm already sensing the theme here of where we're going with this episode. So that's, of course, one of the things we like to showcase. So thank you for that. And then, you know, we've asked this other quick fire before, and it's come from that book or movie, but it doesn't have to. Do you have a favorite quote?
It'd actually probably be from RuneScape. I don't know why. Me and my friends just keep always find ourselves repeating it, and it's core blimey, mate. What are you doing in my pockets? I don't know why. I think it's just so perfect. It's so RuneScape-y.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's become like a group quote.
Nice. That's something that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think of as being someone's favorite quote, but I mean, if you do enough thieving, it just kind of permeates into the group consciousness and just becomes something.
Yeah, yeah. That, no, I mean, like,
that you ask.
We're all card game nerds, right? And okay. So, like, whenever anything in a game happens where, like, someone steals a card or something for an effect, yeah, it's just the immediate thing everyone's come to say.
And then have the picture of the RuneScape character pop up as well in your head, I imagine.
Absolutely.
As well. I would be remiss if I didn't ask about the Fractured Staff and Animate Dead, of where we're at. Touchy subject. Yeah. I know.
Ooh, very.
I saw Mod Doom talking on Reddit about the poll and how that didn't go well. But that's a topic for another day. And the initial discussion on the staff in particular was presented as one of where auto attacks, critical strikes, and the damage ceiling were the problem. So looking at that as a content developer, how do you or the Combat Council arrive at the conclusion that the issues described were the problem? And then the next thing everybody's going to ask, well, is that a problem at all?
It's a very good question. It actually kind of goes way before the nerf right now. It was something the Combat Council was aware of was a problem very early on. It's just that it was always kind of, let's see how it pans out.
Okay.
We've got more content coming in this thing, see how that affects it. And it kind of just got pushed to the side. I was kind of nagging people about it quite frequently. It was something that really kind of grinded my gears, and I wanted solved.
Because we had that first iteration of it on week one that basically killed everything in the room with recursive crits, and then that was fixed, and then it pretty much stayed the same until this past week. So that's almost like a greater ricochet kind of situation on that.
Absolutely. And it was something Ram and I specifically. We were like, yeah, we want this changed. In particular, when we were doing Zami, we were like, can we get someone assigned to handle this thing?
Okay.
Because we just didn't have the time or brain space to handle it properly at that point, between the two of us. Because obviously you think when we're neck deep in Zami, all we know is that this thing is kind of going to pop off and obliterate him, right?
Right.
So we managed to get it scheduled for someone to pick that up prior to Zami going out. I cannot for the life of me remember what happened, but there was some issue where it had to get pulled. I think maybe the dev left or something.
Oh, okay.
So there was literally, there might not have been anyone that was just kind of free to do it prior to Zami going out. I can't remember. Yeah, we were well aware of it from very early.
So it was basically just the idea then that, hey, this thing is just doing too much damage. We see this in terms of how we interact with it. I feel like I should ask this earlier. Are you a mage ranged melee person when you do combat?
So I was mage for the longest time. I used the staff like literally since launch. More recently though, I've been using melee, running around in my vestments of havoc with my Zoc sword, just kind of slapping things. I'm right now I'm basically everything except range is how I'd describe it. Which ironically when I first played RuneScape I was like obsessed with range and that's what I did. but I think I did it too much.
and then with that, so you have your own personal feeling, you know what's happening on the dev side. So I guess that's mm-hmm. how you arrived that it's the problem. Was it something that just you and Raman were looking at, or was it more of a combat council thing saying, hey, we have a problem here?
I think it was Raman and I that were pushing it more than the council. It was Zami released, which was like near on a year ago, is when we were like proper in full gear, like we have to do something about this. It's been way too long. I think the council in general were like, yeah, okay, let's do something about this. I think ModPy was still with us at the time, and he was very much like, let's do something about it.
Yeah. The legendary ModPy.
ModPy at the time was kind of like, I want to say head of the combat council. It was like the go-to. If you had any questions about anything, it'd be like, yo, how do we handle this? What do we do?
Okay.
He was on board with changing it. It's just, I think, through weird timings and kind of a bit of bad luck is that it actually didn't end up getting done before Zami. At which point, I think there wasn't too much reason to change it. If I think at that point, a lot of people were like, oh, it's been too long, just kind of leave it.
Yeah. And then you get to that point, you know, is this going to hurt more people than it helps? So how do you decide that, okay, let's just, you know, take that step forward and do it despite that?
In part, it's like doing stuff like game jams. I'm not sure if you saw some of the stuff I did over game jams where it was like, I reworked the crit system. Now that's not in the game right now.
No.
But when you're trying to do these system-wide changes, you become a lot more aware of problems in the system and things that are kind of unresolved. And stuff like the staff was very much, this is unresolved. And through doing system changes like that and doing more design for rewards, you kind of go, oh, we can't do this thing because the staff still exists in a problem state. In a similar vein to Animate Dead, it was kind of like, we can't do tank stuff specifically that might even slightly affect magic because Animate Dead is still in a broken state.
Right. And then that leads to the next big one on there is, how do you even convince the players that that's a problem at all? Because
we have great difficulty.
I can see it as a player and I understand that, mm-hmm. but at the same time, people have their powerful toys. How do you convince them that change needs to happen?
So a lot of it is kind of showing, I don't want to say showing what we could do instead, but like I think some of the examples we gave when first initially talking about was like, we could do so much more cool stuff with things like crit. But right now we can't give that to you guys, because this thing is blocking it thing will continue to block it. Right. So that's part of it. It's kind of like you have this cool toy now, but you could have way cooler things in the future if you let us tweak this toy. But we can't do that right now because your toy is a massive boulder in our way. So it's trying to do that, but in a fair way, right?
Right. Because, you know, it's one of the most expensive items in game.
Oh, 100%. Yeah,
which,
yeah.
Which is,
good
you know,
reason, right?
Another question that always comes up when it comes to drops and whatnot.
It's always hard to change anything that has a value, right? Because then you're straight up affecting players' progress.
Yeah, like imagine the Iron Man who ground out Timeweaver for it, right?
Exactly. So it is a really hard thing to do. In part, like, you kind of have to trust your gut, and you have to trust the other devs around you to call you out if you're doing something wrong, right?
Okay, so trust the team, trust the people around you.
Trust the team. Because the team has a lot more knowledge of what's going on behind the back and things
right.
that are in progress.
Because you might
have
however many years of content dev experience and player experience, yep. but everybody else also has those. And when you add them together, in my experience,
Absolutely.
That sort of thing hasn't been additive. It's been something more than that. So
yep. And you even on a lower scale, you have like. Say Shogun's literally working on something that's coming out for Magic. I as a dev know that, so that's going to be part of my decision making.
Right.
Whereas players don't have that in their decision making.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
My sense on that reading the room was that this is something that needed to be fixed and moved out of the way, like you say, because we have this thing called necromancy coming up. Of course, you don't need to answer anything on that, but that's my own personal assessment as a player of where we're headed on that.
There's a part of it being that, absolutely. In a sense, necromancy and me now kind of being neck deep in it has meant I couldn't give Animate Dead and staff necessarily the love it deserved.
Yeah.
Like in the beta, I wanted to do a load of experimental changes. But I literally just didn't have the time at that point. It was always the plan. Yeah, let's get the initial ones out, see what players think, iterate on it, do some more, and see what they prefer the most.
But the beta was good in terms of the way it landed for people.
Beta was very positive.
Yeah.
And I know players will say the poll results don't say that.
And that's the huge disconnect. I read the PVM sources in the community. I consulted with our PVM sources in the community. I even went as far as sourcing myself a fractured staff on the beta to test it myself, learn the rotation. And I was in agreement with the people who said it was fine. And when that came out, I was like, what are these 75% of the people in the poll talking about?
We looked at the poll results like straight away. You could see it was players logged in, pressed, not strong enough. And it's like, cool. You haven't touched it. You're just pressing this purely because you
have
nerf. You have an invested interest in it's a thing being nerfed.
Yeah.
It's reasonable for players to do that, obviously. If you have an invested interest in something, you don't necessarily want it to change. But knowing what we want to do with combat and knowing all the stuff behind the scenes, still, it's like, it's something we kind of have to use our gut on that it's the right thing to do, and trust the players that have played it and given us that positive feedback. Basically, but look at the qualitative data, not necessarily the quantitative, right?
Bingo. And then when it comes to actually designing the solution on that, I'd imagine it's just a brainstorming session of, you know, how do we make the special attack still good, but not make it go bonkers and, you know, take the variance out of that.
Yeah. So, The Fasoa particular, I didn't actually design that. That was someone else on the Combat Council designed it way back. I'm not sure if it was for the Zami one or not, for the Zami proposed fix then, or if it was a little bit later. But yeah, when it came to it for me, I was kind of like, checked in with the council to see what the current thoughts were, and everyone still agreed that it was the best resolution for it. So it was basically designed already.
Okay, interesting. And then And then with that, it would have just been a similar design process to designing any then reward space, I guess, to fit absolutely, within the bounds. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It just happens that I'm kind of the face of it because
yeah. I don't know if you feel like that's a good thing or not, because that's the face that has been put on it. But I think that would be shocking to the players to learn that it wasn't actually you who designed the rebalance on that. It was already in the works before we got to.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that bothers me. Like, nerfs need to happen.
Yeah.
We need to get to the line of something being strong for it to be fun, right? Someone said this recently. I think it was the lead designer of Magic the Gathering, that you need to get close to crossing the line. Sometimes you're going to cross the line on how powerful something is. But our job is to get close to crossing the line, so that we can have things feel good, so that you That's can good. Have powerful, cool things to interact with. And sometimes we're going to go past the line, right?
Yeah.
Like, if we're not going past the line, that's probably more of a problem.
Yeah, because then you end up with content that's, you know, quite honestly dead on arrival, and people don't want that.
And I think prior to joining Jagex, this would have been, I forget when I joined now, I joined a year or so before archaeology, helping out. I think we had that to an extent where there was a lot of rewards and content that was scared to cross the line, so we had a lot of kind of weak rewards that was players didn't really care about.
That was definitely felt on the skilling side. I will say that yeah. much.
And yeah, I as a player didn't necessarily like. I fell out of RuneScape a fair amount because it just kind of lost that spark.
Interesting.
There wasn't as much pulling me back.
So that's something you experienced as well, and that's something I always see in the community, is that, you know, you might take long breaks from RS, but you never actually quit.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no one leaves.
You've mentioned RuneScape many times here, and we're going to see exactly how you got your start in that, and in general, what you like doing as a RuneScape player, because I feel like that's something that's always a little bit revealing to talk about for people who work on the game. So how were you first introduced to the game, if you remember?
It would have been, I reckon, from the Miniclip era.
Okay.
I think I have a lot of old memories from the Miniclip era. So I would just, through pure correlation, have to assume it was that, like being a kid in school or whatever, browsing the internet, playing crappy games at school, and then coming across RuneScape on Miniclip.
The one that wasn't crappy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the best one on there. I think it's got to be that. It's that or through school in some sense.
Okay.
But that's such a long distant memory now that no chance of recalling the actual event.
Because, you know, this is something that I see in the RuneScape community quite a bit, is that there's always this discussion about that Miniclip era, what so many people feel is one of the golden eras of RuneScape. Yep. Would you call it that? If you
100%,
okay.
100%.
Yeah.
I think a portion of that comes from just that generation of the internet where the internet was present, right? But you didn't necessarily have access to all the information at your fingertips as much as you do now.
Mm-hmm.
So a game like RuneScape was just one big mystery, just like waiting to sink your teeth into.
Yeah, because it was basically before that you had your, you know, plain Jane static web pages, and it was right before we got to the rich internet that we have today, or before that started, where all the social media companies started popping off and all that. And I think that level of amazement that you could just go on to a web browser at school at lunch, That was the case for you, I bet. The case for many of our listeners.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Pop open RuneScape and it's there. And not only is it something that remembers when you log in, but it just persists for so long in that it wasn't one of those flash games that you would play once and then away you go. It definitely sets that memory in your head. So, of course, everybody started the game at their own point in time. Did you know it was going to stick for that long before you decided it was going to be a permanent fixture of your life?
I think I knew it would stick for a while because my immediate friendship group was all into it.
Okay.
Including like my brother and his older friends were also into it. So I think I knew it was going to stick probably longer than like, you know, the other small games that you'd play at the time. But no way near to the extent it has.
and the fact that, you know, it's provided your career at this point.
Exactly. So,
now we can, I guess, ask this question in the form of a spectrum then, because you played way back when and you still play today. What's your favorite skill? You can, you know, pick at any point. You could pick back when you started. You could pick 5 years ago. You could pick now if you want.
That's a very good question.
And let's leave necromancy off the list since the players don't have that yet.
Yeah. Yeah, because that'd be an obvious pick, right? It's interesting because I wouldn't say it is nowadays, but on release, I think the hunter skill I loved.
I have a lot
of memories of like around the release date and how much changed in the game.
Okay. From that perspective, fair. Because I was going to say, hunter is not something you always hear people say as their favorite skill, let alone in its early incarnations.
I think like, especially when you're a kid, like you can't necessarily evaluate how good something is. But to see how much of the game changed when it released, and it was like, the areas south of Ogres near Yennil, right?
Yeah,
thank you. They added a bunch of content there. And I think it was just the pure quantity of content felt like a lot. So yeah, on release, that's a skill I'd love to get some attention though.
Yeah.
I think the hunter skill could be fantastic. It's just not really had the love it deserved.
Yeah. And in recent years
per se.
One thing we learned with Fresh Start. Did you play Fresh Start?
I actually didn't.
Okay. Because you mentioned Hunter.
Yeah.
And one thing that a lot of people I heard learned with Fresh Start is that the Hetz Oasis update actually made the first 30 or so levels and beyond of Hunter actually not painful anymore from where it was.
Sure, yeah, that doesn't actually surprise me.
But
I do vaguely remember how difficult Hunter actually was to train.
Yeah,
on first release, like doing bird snares and things, right?
And then things really take off when you get the box traps and whatnot as you progress.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think there's a lot of unexplored potential there, really.
We always joke on the podcast that I forget where it was, but at some point I think Mod Mark said that he almost wished at some point that Hunter wasn't in the game, and based on that, that would definitely have an interesting perspective on your mind as you were growing up with RuneScape. So if we fast forward a bit, any other favorite skills?
Archaeology obviously is one that,
of course.
Right now, I'd probably say, like, probably outside of combat and whatever, I'd say archaeology, just because I'd say it's the most polished skill, and it's just, I feel like it's genuinely nice to interact with, like, whatever part of the game you're in, or at least that's how it felt when I was going through it.
Fair. And so would you say that that's your player perspective or your dev perspective?
Bit of both, probably. I'm probably a bit more attached to archaeology as well, because it was, if you don't know, I was actually QA at Jagex before I became a dev. Right. And archaeology was one of the projects I helped QA. So I'm probably a bit more attached to it because of that.
And I bet that's a whole interesting discussion in itself about how absolutely. That went. Because I remember it was supposed to release, I think it was supposed to release January, but the decision was made to hold it back into March, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, on that.
I cannot even remember why that decision was made.
I think Mod Warden at the time said just extra polish and whatnot around the dig sites.
Which looking at it now, you can say that's absolutely the right decision, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that brings us to where we are next. What are you currently working on in RuneScape on your personal account, given that you have this account that goes back to 05?
On my personal account, I am currently working on the Raksha log.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's definitely some high-tier PVM, if I must say so myself.
it's in the upper tiers. I wouldn't call myself an amazing PVMer. I'm currently I think 600 dry on Greater Chain.
Oh.
Which I need for the log.
How does that feel? How does that feel knowing how the systems work and whatnot internally?
You know, so from a lot of players in that situation, first off, there's a lot of players that have it worse. Like I've seen players go, 1,500 to 2,000 dry, if not more. I'm just enjoying it, if I'm honest.
Okay.
Which sounds weird. A lot of players are like, they just want it done. But I'm just doing the log because I enjoy it. And that's kind of how I approach content.
And that's kind of all how we started our first 99 and 120 grinds, is just doing content because we enjoy it.
Yes. I think the best part of RuneScape is the journey rather than when you actually get there. I always enjoy RuneScape more when I'm working towards something.
Yes.
So I'm perfectly happy just sitting here doing some dino. And then when that's done, I'll have something else to go to. I still need to complete ED2 because Blackstone Dragon doesn't want to give me the other two codexes. Not Blackstone Dragon, the other two in there, Astalon and Barracliffe. Blackstone Dragon is the only one that does like me. I think I'm at 3 barges and the pet, and I haven't had either of the codexes.
Yikes.
But again, I'm just doing it because I enjoy it. If I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't bother with the log.
And you know, that's the thing that I always see is that I feel like I've started to see this less and less over the years, but at some point, maybe around 2016-ish or so, I feel like one thing that was very prevalent is that people going on long grinds like that, whether it be something like comp or trim or mm-hmm. drop logs, just burnt themselves out. And I was like, you know, if this isn't enjoying to you, why are you doing this? You play the game to enjoy it. And that's number one.
Absolutely. And I take that kind of mindset. So I am wary of like, I want to keep an open mind to how these other players feel, right? It's a bit of a weird one because the like drop logs and such, they weren't necessarily designed to be completed. They were designed kind of as flash things for players that have put in the work and really enjoyed these specific types of content, right? Kind of like skilling pets as well. It's like, oh, that's really cool. This player has the pet. They weren't necessarily designed as you 100% have to go and get all of these, right? And that's how some players see it. They see it as I have to go and get all of these things. So there's a bit of there's kind of some crossed wires there with how you approach that. Like as a company, should we be respecting those players that think they have to go and get all of these things? They have to do the drop log. I think actually a good example of this is the Mod Ramen's Golden Appraisal title.
Yeah,
like that. As far as I'm aware, wasn't the drop rate on that just tweaked? It was recently, and I think it was tweaked because of community outrage or a few loud voices about it. But Golden Appraisal, it wasn't necessarily designed to be gotten. It was one of those cool things where if a player happened to get all these things and all the stars aligned, they had a really cool thing to show off for it. We're in a state right now where players kind of
expect
to be able to complete everything, right?
You put it on the screen, they're just going to go for it and charge through it.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's where we're in a weird situation because of it.
Yeah, and then I see it in another way as well, is that one of the things that that became apparent to me and people who I surround myself with in game absolutely love those logs, not because it was something that they just had to go and do, because it was something that, well, we're 65% of the way there. Let's just, you know, treat that as something else to work on gradually and slowly. So yep. I feel like that's the middle ground compared to both of the ends that you just highlighted there.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's like it's a kind of form of engagement to keep players' places a little bit longer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got everything except X item. You might as well just stay there a little bit and tick it off. I do sympathize for those players that are like, I'm this many dry on a drop. Like, that does genuinely suck.
Yeah, and when you look at other MMOs, we're not going to necessarily go too deep in this. There are other drop systems out there that could be looked at to the point. Mm-hmm. Where it would make it so that it's easier to get the fun new toys and such in RS, but at the same time, there'd have to be a fundamental shift in terms of how the community saw drops, which I think is something that Mod Jack touched on in one of his live streams earlier this year, would require that huge shift. And I personally, in terms of what I watch, and be interesting to hear your perspective on this, if the community would be willing to in effect look at drops differently. And I feel like we can kind of lean into that a little bit here, because you've worked on drop tables before and you're an RS player. Do you like it how it is, or and you're free to of course not answer this, but are you comfortable with how this is as a player?
It's a hard one. Really, I look back at say Dagonoff Kings back in the day, right? I think drops were like one in 50.
Sounds about right.
Which you hear nowadays and you go, oh, that's really common. But like back in the day, you do a Dagonoff King trip, you'd only get a few kills and you'd have to bank, right?
Yeah, because they
the time investment the time investment is probably equivalent to nowadays, really. So it kind of is a thing that's just always been that way. Obviously you have some examples, like you have Blakors, right, which drop the shards of Armadil. Yeah. And I enjoy doing Blakors. I remember on release they were so much fun. And I think part of that came from, you had a consistent thing to get, being the shards and the staff, right? I think it equated to you had to kill 1,000 Glacors for the staff, which at the time, that was a lot. That felt like a lot.
And I think it was one of the first Slayer creatures out there, too, that had that level of mechanic to it as well, how it fragmented and you had to pick and choose which one you'd take out first, which was neat.
Yeah, I think at the time it might not have even been a Slayer creature technically. I think it might have just been what I suppose you'd call today a mini boss, kind of like Tormented Demons.
Right.
I don't think it was actually a Slayer creature. The thing with Glacors was they still had that, oh my god, I got the RNG roll because you had the boots, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's some middle ground where you could have bosses that have both a consistent thing and you have an RNG component in there. Thinking about Glacors back in the day, I don't think they'd have been as fun without the chance to get that really cool, shiny, rare drop. And I think that's what was appealing about them. They had a consistent method and they had the lottery roll.
Yeah, that, and you know, thinking about it, you're 100% right in that, because there were always an NPC that I went to go and kill, and I never really connected the dots of why that would be, and perhaps that's it.
You're getting that kind of consistent, oh yeah, another shard, cool, a little bit of dopamine, right? And then you hit the table, and you get this awesome, cool, shiny pair of boots, which back in the day were, I believe they were best in slot. I think all three sets were best in slot.
Yeah, they
were. So it was like, yeah, it was a really, really great feeling. And I think to some extent you want that great feeling of, I got this cool rare thing. That being said, I think modern day drop tables have gone too far in the lottery sense, right?
Interesting take. Is there a specific one you have in mind, or do you want to keep that close to your chest?
Obviously, the initial one that comes up is Archglacor, right? That's the one you see players having the most problems with.
Fair.
I was fortunate in that I didn't have that problem. I happened to roll two cores pretty early.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So my perspective is warped, but I absolutely understand how players feel about that. And if I had gone as dry as some of those players, I'm sure my perspective would be a little further gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, going, I don't know, say, I don't know the exact time to actually get a core, especially for your average player who's doing, I don't know, say 0 to 200%. That's completely off the top of my head. So they're doing 0 to 200%.
Right.
Yeah, their chance to get a core is going to be very low, and they're going to have to put in a lot of hours. And if you're doing it to chase drops, which a lot of players are, that's just straight out disheartening, right?
Yep.
It's different if you just flat out enjoy it.
Exactly, and that's where we get back to that whole discussion about, you know, what's too far and what's the appropriate system for a drop table, and even your ratchet discussion. You have to be doing it for what you for what you enjoy, or else, you know, it's just gonna be that tough slog.
Absolutely. Part of me does wonder if we should experiment in the future with a boss that say, I don't know, Kerepak 2. I'm using Kerepak, so we have an example to relate to.
You sure.
We make another Kerepak, and he still drops the Staff of Armadil, but say it's like 1 in 10 for a piece. So it's very common. You're going to get a piece within, like, I don't know, say an hour's work, almost guaranteed. But then on top of that, we have some RNG mechanic for the players that want to, like, really optimize to get, say, I don't know, a Kerepak staff, but it has a new specific perk on it that makes it ever so slightly better than a standard one. Say you could roll a Kerepak staff that happens to have 1% crit chance on it, right?
That'd be interesting.
And that would be the best version of it. You could have one that has, I don't know, 1% damage instead, but the crit one, for whatever reason, is better.
So in effect, have like a base version and then a trimmed version with some other.
Correct. Yeah. The way I'm thinking, I'm kind of equating it to like shiny Pokemon. Like,
yes, that's a very good example.
The average person playing through can just go and get the Pokemon. It's easy to get. But your high-end PVM that wants to really grind, really optimize, can go, I'm going to go get the shiny one because it's ever so slightly better. I think that's something we could experiment with, so that you hit both things of having a consistent drop, but you also have that huge lottery dopamine hit.
And this episode is supposed to be about you, and I just have to say, from that perspective, that would probably have me PVMing every day if something like that was in there. Because I've mentioned on the show that since the start of the year, it's kind of become a more sporadic thing, whereas last year it was more consistent. But if there was that different kind of mechanic in there to make one thing more common, but also have the shiny, so to speak, in there, I would personally find that more engaging. It'd be interesting to see what kind of metrics there are to see where the community would land on that. So I like that one. I like that one. But that's so interesting how we go from Raksha to that, to discussing about where you could go as a systems designer, developer, and whatnot on there. Because, you know, we look at Raksha, for example, that I think has the, and you can tell me if you don't like this characterization of it, that has the moniker being the boss that involves prayer switching and whatnot. Mm. And, you know, on the other hand, there's a lot of people who don't like that. But I'm guessing for you, you just kind of get down into a rhythm, and that's why you're able to go on Raksha the way you've been going.
At the beginning, I found it very hard, if I'm honest. I was using Mage to start, and I just couldn't get on with it. Purely through, we can probably go into this later, but just like combat issues is what I'd call it.
Yeah.
I was finding it hard to focus on the boss because there's so much to do on the bar.
Right.
But then the more I did it, it's one of those things you just get into a rhythm of it. To the point now, I think most Raksha kills, I'm literally just not looking at Raksha. He's kind of off in my peripheral, and I was like, oh, he's about to tail swipe, do a thing.
So your eyes are on the bar then, or you're actually...
I'd say my eyes are on the bar slash my character more than they are on the boss. And that's actually a fundamental problem I have with RuneScape combat, is that your eyes right now are on your bar and stuff more than they are on your encounter.
That's so interesting you mentioned that. I forget what boss it was. It might be one of the Elder God Wars ones, but I found myself being in that exact same situation playing through that, is that I was always paying more attention to the action bar than I was to what was going on around me.
Yeah.
So interesting. And
100%.
And with that, we can kind of start talking about how you became that PVM JMod. You mentioned that you started at JX in QA, but before that, what first gave you the idea that you wanted to work on games for a living? Was it RS? Was it something else?
Oh. So I don't know what it was. I just had a sudden change of heart. So out of college, I got accepted to do a law degree. And one day I just went, oh, I don't want to do this. I'm going to do games instead. And that was it. I went and did a games degree instead of law.
That's like 180 from each other almost.
100%. I don't know. I think I was just like, law was like the smart option to do. But I wanted to do something fun. So I did.
Did you always have the intention with that of ending up at Jagex, or did that kind of just happen?
Very early on, my intention was to end up at Jagex. I can't remember exactly where. At some point, I applied at Jagex whilst I was doing my game dev degree, and I didn't hear back from that. By the way, no hard feelings, Jagex.
You got there in the end.
I got there in the end. Yeah. So out of uni with my game dev degree, I went to work for this QA company that did outsourced QAing.
All right.
For various different companies. But in the back of my mind, I was like, yeah, I still want to work on Jagex. I'll just have something to tide me over. And it just so happened that they had done QA with Jagex in the past. So that was kind of my foothold. We went from there. Ended up doing some outsourced QA work with Jagex.
Was archaeology that outsourced QA, or was that something?
Was I still? I'm trying to remember. For a portion of archaeology, I was outsourced. But then maybe it was all of archaeology. I forget exactly. Then essentially COVID hit right around that sort of time. And that's when I got straight up hired instead of being outsourced slash third party. It was around I forget the exact timeline, but it was around archaeology. I joined proper. Even before that, even being outsourced, I felt like I was like a part of the team.
Right.
Everyone was super, super welcoming.
I was going to say, I feel like we need to touch on that briefly, because there are portions of the community that give QA an unfair rap in terms of,
you
know, the memes that, you know, QA does nothing, the players are the QA, and so on. and so forth. So that I can't imagine being in that role and seeing that. I feel like it's one where QA would probably want to keep their heads down on that. But what was your QA perspective?
There is an element of that where you feel like you're getting the stick for no real reason, right? And I see how, like, you see how hard QA work and how good they are at their jobs. And it's like, from a dev's perspective, especially now, it's like, that it is super unfair because various bugs get in for God knows what reasons. And I'd say 99.9% of the time, it's not QA's fault, right?
Yeah.
It could... There's times literally a dev will miss a comment on a job where they've changed something. Say I've made a new NPC and it is just a dev has forgotten to mention something. Like I've changed X as an example, or I've changed how these two things interact. So that really isn't on QA, especially like those sorts of things.
And especially when you have something as massive as RuneScape, it's those interactions that caused the bugs 100% that the players feel those bugs. So
I think a lot of players forget just how big of a game RuneScape is. Like in the amount of content that is interwoven, changing one thing could have effects on 10 other things. Right? Say I don't know. Say you make a new familiar that has a combat effect. Okay, but have you thought about an X, Y, Z situation?
Yeah. And then you have people.
QA are fantastic at picking those up.
And you have people who will say it's up to the JMods to know those interactions. But no, you guys are designing and building the content around that. Yes, it's there to consider, but it's not always going to be 100% in the forefront. What do you have to say to the people who feel that QA is a meme? Because I feel like you've moved from that area of being in QA to now being a dev. You've experience the entire spectrum on that, and your player as well. What would you have to say to those kinds of players?
I get it is what I would say. So I play when I'm playing other games. As an example, I'll be like, "Oh, this is." I was going to swear that. I'll try not to swear. I have a real potty mouth, so I apologize. This is awful, right? How did they not pick up X, Y, and Z? And I kind of step back as a game dev, and I'm like, oh yeah, well this could have happened and this could have happened, and you kind of take a step back and understand and realize how these things actually happen.
Yeah.
So as a player with no game dev experience and not being in industry, I can sympathize with why they feel like that. It is just straight up a bad take. QA is a meme. It's just a bad take.
Yeah.
The QA on the game are fantastic, and the amount of stuff players don't see that QA pick up on somehow.
All right. Fair. And you know, QA. It's always fun to talk to the QA people. We talked to Mod Pebble tail end of last year for Purple Tuesday accessibility stuff. And that was a fun conversation in itself. I'll include a link to that in the show notes for anybody who's joining us for the first time here. But QA, RuneScape player, heavily involved in combat presently. How did you become one of the PVM combat-related JMods? Is that something you naturally gravitated towards, or was there a different path that you took on that internally?
Ooh, I'm trying to remember when I joined. The combat council, that is. I've always been interested in RuneScape combat. How did that go down? I can't remember if it was when I was a dev or when I was still in QA. I joined. I'd actually have to check the wiki.
All right, and sure
it would tell me.
I know one of the first things I remember seeing you on as a content developer that was definitely combat related was the Matriarchs.
Oh yeah, I was actually trained on that project.
Oh wow, okay.
So Mod Orion trained me. He was great. It was a very fun project to work on. So like after the core the most of the core training, Modderama was like, yeah, let's just do this. Let's do a project.
Nice.
And so yeah, we did Matriarchs. I don't think there was a lot of time given to it.
Okay.
Yeah, I did some dialogue stuff on that. I did the rewards. I think I did all of them on it.
And those are very evergreen rewards based on what we've seen. And
yeah.
That's one of my favorite things about the Matriarchs encounter is that those rewards are good for high tier PVMers and were supplemented and augmented with the Zamorak drops. But at the same time, if somebody's always getting into PVM at first, I will always send them to the Matriarchs as one of their first targets. Yeah.
I feel like Matriarchs, they get memed on a lot, right? I feel like. But yeah, I don't think it, I think it is a pretty good place to get started. There's some kind of light mechanics in there.
Yeah.
The only real downside, so to speak, is the old hit chance problem there.
Yeah. But, accuracy.
It was done with good intentions, if I remember rightly. I believe Orion wanted them to be kind of beefy. So, one, I would make use of weakness there. So obviously they're some of the few bosses that have specific weaknesses. Like yeah. I think Thendrakken's weak to arrows as an example.
Also spiritual successors to the Danganoth Kings.
Exactly. And so the players that went there and that did enjoy them would have a reason to upgrade their gear so they could do them faster.
That's an interesting design goal.
Yeah.
I had never thought of that.
It was good intentions. I just don't think it just didn't work out that way, per se.
Because
accuracy in the game is just such a bit of a nightmare for players to interact with.
Because you mentioning that right now, I'd never thought of that before. And if that was in your guys' mind as a design goal on that, it wasn't immediately clear that was part of it. Mm-hmm. And looking at it that way, yeah, accuracy. That's a very sore spot on the handful of bosses where it matters. So, and you know, being involved with the podcast and whatnot on Matriarch Week, I actually did a deep dive into accuracy and went through all the resources on that. And oh boy, that was a topic in itself. That was one of our ones. On there. So
yeah, no,
so
100%.
Would you say it was a natural progression from the Matriarchs onward from there?
After I just had this thing where I just kept getting the rewards on whatever project I was on. I think part of it was being a new dev. Rewards were actually quite a nice thing to design and to make because they're not necessarily as interconnected as other bits.
Right.
And then came
Elder God Wars, and we know how big those rewards and impactful those
were. Yeah, I mean, it was Matriarchs. Then a few months later, it was Sea of Sentistan, which I did the rewards for again. Then straight out of that, I was helping with the Krosus rewards.
Which might have been an interesting discussion, I bet, at the time, being, you know, first skilling boss for RS. How do you make this profitable without crushing the economy?
Exactly. That really was an interesting one. You can actually see in a lot of my early designs, you can see like just the wave of nostalgia that's going over me. Like Matriarchs, let's do a shout out back to Danganoth Kings. City of Sentistan, let's do a shout-out back to Ancient Magics. They were fully intended to be like a follow-on from Desert Treasure. That was literally my reason for choosing them.
So you'd say then that there was a portion of your own personal nostalgia that informed some of those rewards.
100%.
Wow.
The initial design of should we do X, so like should we do rings on Matriarchs, yeah, 100% nostalgia. Should we do new spells on Sea of Sentistan? 100% me just loving Desert Treasure. The initial design for Sea of Sentistan was curse upgrades of some kind. I can't remember exactly what they were, but when I got given rewards to play around with, When I came to that project, yeah, I was like, we should do spells instead. And then Croesus, it was a shout out back to what's the name of it? The fungal armor, Ganodermic, because that was one of my highlights of RuneScape, playing around with Ganodermic.
Of course.
Just pre EOC.
Yeah.
So you got that fungal tank magic armor, and it's just another shout out back to those. So yeah, you can kind of see, like, I go with the nostalgia wave of things I'd previously enjoyed in RuneScape.
So then it wasn't necessarily that you were just assigned combat things or you became a combat person. It was that the reward space was a good place for a new content developer to work on. Yeah. And then we all get graced with these items primarily from your nostalgia. So folks, thank Mod Sponge's nostalgia for City of Sentist and spells and Matriarch rings and so on and so forth.
I'd say the first two or three was like, this is good for a new dev. And then after that, it was like other devs and like the producers and whatever was like, I seem to really like it when this guy makes rewards. So I kind of just kept getting handed them after that point.
Wonderful. And then with that, we kind of pivot into your favorite pieces of work. And I have to ask about Zamorak. Was this another one that you worked on the rewards for, or was it primarily mechanics with Mod Ramen that you worked on at Zamorak?
So both, really. I did the design for the rewards. I think I made all of them as well. Don't hold me to that. I might have been one or two I didn't
we
make.
Won't. There's no
INT. But Robin and I designed the whole encounter together. I think that was the first project I was on from minute one. So it was my first time actually going through like full early design. We designed it all together.
We had a talk with Mod Ramen last year about the design on Zamorak in relation to how it became one of the most accessible bosses with story mode and in rage pushes that are still continuing today. but with that on Zamorak, outside of its accessibility angle in terms of just the general design of it from the ground up, do you feel looking back at this that this was a successful design for you guys? And I feel like this is a continuation of our Mod Ramen discussion, and it's going to be interesting to get your perspective on this too.
It's a yes and a no. Early design, there was a lot of things we wanted to do, and some of that didn't make it into the game, and I think we both wish it had. So like the dungeon and boss itself was a lot more narrative driven in our designs. In one version of it, you had Adrastea go around the dungeon with you and would kind of talk about everything there. Maybe have like a little mini quest or something to rescue some of the people from the jail. And then she'd talk about some of the runes and what's going on and the demons and kind of give you the full backstory as you're doing the dungeon. She'd just like be talking VO to you. So you're running through the dungeon, you're just getting VO and she's explaining what's going on. And I think I wish that we had been able to get that in. Mod Ramen had some great designs for that. And you actually saw part of that in the pre-release for Zamorak, where Zamorak kind of just appears on your screen and starts yelling out across the world.
Okay.
That came out of us wanting a system to do narrative whilst you're doing other stuff. Because obviously most of RuneScape's narrative, right, is you click on a person, you sit there and you read it. So we wanted a way to deliver that whilst you're doing something else.
And that's an accessibility thing too, because that's something we are big on the podcast is lore
100%.
And angles, and then accessibility comes into that. So that would have been neat, and I think definitely provides an area for further iteration if you guys ever want to go down that path.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You kind of actually then get, I think Adrastea takes you through the dungeon in one of the quests, doesn't she?
Aftermath.
Just after. Yeah, Aftermath, that's it. I wish we'd got that in, but you can kind of see that come to light in different aspects. Yeah, there's a few kind of wacky designs we had. At one point, the dungeon had a weekly chest system in it where you're essentially rewarded for going through the dungeon once a week or whatever.
I feel like that could potentially be a sore spot, you know, adding in weeklies and whatnot, given the fact that...
That's essentially why we didn't do it.
Okay. Would that have been in addition to the existing lore or just... Or, sorry, the existing drops, or would that have been the drop system?
So that would have probably been the way that the slivers and stuff were delivered.
Okay.
Instead of through mini bosses. So you'd have a rare chance, but then if you went and did the weekly chests and found them or whatever, the idea was that they'd change location each week as well. So you'd actually have to go through all the nooks and crannies of the dungeon and find them.
Yeah.
That would be the delivery system. But we swiftly realized that neither of us actually like engaging in dailies and weeklies on RuneScape. So we swiftly avoided that.
And the interesting part about that is that I think it's done right in a very specific boss instance, and that's raids, because that has managed to keep the price of the MazCab codices up at, you know, the 40 to 50 mil range.
As
unfortunate as it might be, it gives people who like doing raids a reason to keep doing raids when they can have that drop chance on there. So it has to be done right.
If raids was like farmable, the codex would either be much rarer or it'd be worthless. Right?
And then at that point, there'd be no reason to do raids because you have to get the 10 people together.
Absolutely.
What's the point in that, right?
I think my thing with Zami is I wish we'd made it less noisy in that I think I've spoken about this a little bit before, but you have a dungeon, you have a boss, you have story mode, you have normal mode, you have enrage mode, you have single player,
it's
you have
the kitchen
duo,
sink.
Trio. There's so much there. It didn't need that much. I wish we could yell back at our previous selves, like, you don't need this much.
Simplify it,
100%. I think, like, as an example, the dungeon could have just been a separate encounter.
Right.
So do the dungeon once, you now have access to Zami. You can go and do Zami because you're at that part of the story right now, right? Not the 25 kills nonsense. Just a straight up, you can just go kill him. You've done it once, and it follows the story.
Yeah, and I mean, players were doing that before in other Elite Dungeons, sanctioned or not.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, true.
What was your, what would you say is one thing that you took away from the Zamorak project, personally?
Ooh, that's a good one. A good one, Ramen says a lot, is that you always underestimate how powerful the player is and how good players are. That is one that stuck with me now.
Okay.
Seeing the lengths players are getting to now is just like obscene. I don't actually even know what the enrage count currently is at, but I'm sure it's in the tens of thousands. It is genuinely surprising how good players are at this game. And how many tools they have at their disposal, whether that's a good or bad thing.
And that's such an important thing to ask, because you could, in effect, curtail that power. But I think if you do that, you're hurting the mid range and the low range more than you're hurting the high range at that point.
Yes, absolutely. It's a hard balance, really. I think some of the different systems of rewards and power and stuff could do with cleaning up. So that is a little more streamlined, a little more understandable for both devs and players.
Right.
It's so hard to manage and judge.
I just checked the high scores. We're hovering at about 20,000 in rage across the entire table.
Absolutely wild.
In duo and above. So
I do wonder if they'll hit
11,000.
11K. I wonder if I want to know where the hard limit's going to be. I think Rahman spoke on this before, that like right now there's just an arbitrary cap somewhere of a number, but we can just raise it if players get close to it.
Yeah, I think the arbitrary cap right now is 60,000, if I remember correctly.
That sounds about right, yeah. I felt that is there a point where it just becomes undoable? We don't actually know.
And then at that point, I think one of the most interesting things to do would be to look at, you know, what these kills look like from what the players are doing, what their bars are doing, what the power level is doing at that point, and are they on a different level compared to everybody else? And I think the answer to that would be yes. And it would just be such a fascinating thing to study, even for myself, for somebody who's, you know, not anywhere near remotely close to doing that and doing Zamorak and Rage pushes. But
yeah, for sure.
So looking back at Zamorak, what's your favorite thing that pops into mind regarding the project? Can be anything. Could be a mechanic, a reward, memory building.
A project.
Anything.
In general, it's actually like real world experience rather than the project. Like Robin and I spent so many nights in the office working on it. And it's just like, it's such a good memory of us two just kind of sitting down and hashing things out.
So were you able to work on it then in person together, or did that have to be remote? Were you still doing remote work at the time?
I think it started as remote. A lot of the design was remote, the early design. But as most projects do, they kind of warp once you start actually developing them. You go, okay. Oh, this thing is good in design, but now that we've got our hands on it, it sucks. So let's do something else. And so you have like small snippets of more design when you're actually in the project.
And I'd imagine that's at the early prototyping stage, just to minimize cost and whatnot.
Correct. And those sorts of bits were in person. And a lot of the kind of end balancing was in person. And even small tweaks to mechanics. There's one mechanic we pulled out very late into the project.
Oh, wow. Okay.
At one point, there was these kind of two spires that Zamorak raised up. And each of them gave him 50% damage reduction.
Ooh.
So the idea was, okay, now you have to go focus something else and come back to him. In reality, it just felt bad because every minute or so, the boss just became immune because both of these things
and
had
it would
up,
add,
right?
It sounds more chaotic with that.
It really was. But you can see the influence of that in other mechanics, like the floor traps.
Yeah. I was thinking that.
Because you'd have to run across the arena, right? So if you tripped any traps, that was a potential death zone, so you had to be aware. But the floor traps don't necessarily mean as much now without that mechanic there. Obviously you still run between pads and you have little instances of movement, but there was a lot more movement in one of the initial builds.
All right. We've been talking a lot about combat in PVM, and that's fair. Mm. That's fine. But there's also something else that you worked on that was a skilling update, technically, but it also leaned into that combat in PVM side. And I'm talking about Garden of Karid. Because
yes.
Behind the scenes, it was that drop table rework of removing herbs.
Oh, I completely forgot that we did that. I was like, where's he going with this?
Yeah. And you mentioned Garden of Karid as one of your favorite projects. So with that, I guess I have to ask, was it because of the actual garden itself and the changes to farming that you list this as a favorite, or was it the drop table side?
Part of it is because it was actually like from dev side, it was such a smooth project.
Okay.
And myself and Shogun, we got so much done in such a short period of time. When you think about it, there's actually like a lot of kind of game wide changes.
Yeah.
When you have the drop table stuff, you have removal of dead plants. Reworking some patches like Belladonna and whatnot. I feel like between the two of us, we actually went above and beyond what was kind of expected of that project.
Okay.
and we had great fun on it, to be honest.
I mean, you can definitely see that, and you can feel that in terms of how it lands. And, you know, it's a system I interact with daily, as I do daily, sometimes more than daily. Herb runs. That's kind of RuneScape player I am. And it was something, from my perspective there, that I truly appreciated. But how did you guys think about approaching that with the community? Because, we're taking herbs away from bosses. And, you know, I'm specifically looking at Telos and the 2499 range of what happens there with that.
So looking back at it, I think you can see it's clearly a problem that how many herbs came from drop tables, right? And it just kept getting more and more and more and more and more and more and more. It was actually something Shogun kind of championed more so than me.
Okay.
It was a tough one to approach with the community because you never know how they're going to react whenever you're taking anything away from them, right?
And from the sounds of what Mod Jack said as well, you guys weren't necessarily sure if the farmers would be able to supply the same level of herbs.
It was, there was a lot of kind of experimental nature in it. We were prepared to make very quick changes if needed.
Okay.
But luckily, Shogun, he's pretty good at balancing, it turns out. And he kind of, when we look at numbers, he's kind of nailed it. It's hard to know how much of that is visible player side. It's not something I've kept track of too much, like herb prices and inputs and outputs.
So Shogun was primarily in charge of the balancing and the herb changes then. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. I handled more of like changing to core farming, doing again, well, we kind of actually split rewards on this one. Like doing the dialogue and the area in general, just kind of doing little bits, which I really enjoyed doing. And it's a project where I keep rambling.
It's fine, because I was going to say that it feels like the template, I'm trying to figure out a way to put this, and you can tell me if this is a bad way to put it, but it feels like something like Garden of Charid can be the template for a skilling update that isn't too big, right?
Yes.
Like, it's not a major rework to a portion of the skill. It's not a new training method. It's just something to spruce up a skill around the edges.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, personally, I think a problem RuneScape's had in the past is that the resolution to a problem would just to be to tack on more content.
Right.
It's like, this skill's a little behind. Give it a training method. And it's like, but improve the actual skill and make it less, I don't want to say friction, but you reduce the friction in some senses, improve it in other ways. Don't necessarily just instantly go to a training method.
Right.
Because it creates noise, I feel like.
Yeah.
And we're at a point now where you look at the wiki for any skill and there's 5-6 different training methods that are outside of the core skill.
And it's at that point you ask, like, why? When I think the lean into invention on this was also appreciated, because those invention devices before were kind of useless, and now, you know, each of them has a very clear use, farming ones in particular.
Absolutely.
And I think when you add all that together, you get to a point where you get to a very satisfying update on Garden of Charid. Do you know, and I don't know if you would have the answer to this or if it's something you want to talk about, do you know where we stand today on how the herb economy is doing, and if it's working as intended to provide the necessary herbs into the game after the update?
As far as I'm aware, last time I spoke to Shogun, is that it's performing really well and it's doing what it's supposed to. Again, I don't know how that reflects player side. It might be worth just having a quick look at herb prices and stuff. Number of herbs and number of seeds were kind of trending towards where we wanted. Obviously, there's a huge backlog of those things to get through first, right? If, like, players have astronomical amounts of both.
I think we saw the update in November, and, you know, my personal feeling on that, just looking at it from an economics perspective, is that we probably wouldn't start to see that backlog decrease for a couple double XPs after that, like May-ish. Absolutely. Probably would have been my guess on that. So that's good to hear. And I just have to ask, in addition to all of that with Garden of Charid, you mentioned, I think you said it was just that you got to work on something that expanded outward like that. Is there anything you'd like to say as to round it out as to why this was one of your favorite projects to work on?
It's actually kind of all silly little extras we got to do as well. I think Shogun and I scoped the project very well. We kind of kept it within its bands and didn't let it bloat. So we were able to do things like the little treasure hunt that we added, the thieving stuff that Shogun added. So we had the druids that you could pickpocket from, but he added the auto pickpocketing as a baseline. We had times that he literally just like knocked that out in a day.
Oh, wow. Just
cool. Here's a cool extra little thing. Great. That's awesome.
You look at that, that's a huge quality of life for the pickpocketing training.
Absolutely.
Method. I think anybody, and I think that's a smart thing to consider, because pretty much anybody who had that relic initially unlocked would have used it whenever they were pickpocketing. So at that point, I guess you ask, well, maybe should this be a part of the core skill? And then we let the relic power do something else.
Yeah. There was a lot of devs internally and other people, not just devs, that were like, this is a farming update. Why are you doing thieving? And Shogun and I were kind of like, it feels very RuneScape-y.
Yeah, it did.
Just add in a random thing. And we don't do that enough anymore, is how we both felt about it. You'd look at whatever updates in the past, and it'd be like, here's a quest. And in a random part of the quest, you pickpocket a guy. So now we've added all these pickpocketing things. I think an example is like Dwarf Traders. Just got added with a quest randomly.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels very RuneScape-y. And that's the sort of thing that I love. Just these small interactables.
It was definitely a highlight of the year, because you had, you know, so many other things like the end of the Elder God War series, Extinction, Zamorak, so much more. But then you have this little thing called Garden of Charid that had such a huge impact as well. So I think you hit the nail on the head with that as to why it stands out.
Such a small project. Yeah, I think it had a really good impact. It was pretty neat.
So we've come this far, and I think that's a good point for us to move on to our quickfire closeout here. And this might be stepping into a firestorm, but if you could design any combat-focused reward in-game, with the caveat that this might never happen, I got to say that to people out there, this might never happen, what would it be?
Ooh, that is a good one. Because now there's like a million ideas in my head buzzing of random stuff that I've done and wanted to do. That's so hard to pick out one. It's more general focused. I hope we can do it at some point. I would like more effects of, I actually spoke about this in a Discord not too long ago, of X thing gets like 10 times more powerful, but you can't do Y. So an example would be your adrenaline is permanently at 100%, but you can't critically strike, as purely as an example.
Okay.
Those types of effects that are completely game-changing in how you play. You approach everything completely differently, right?
But on the surface, it seems like such a simple change.
Oh, 100%. So like, an armor set that's like, you are permanently at 33% health, but you deal double damage or something like that, right?
Okay.
You can just I'd like to see more wacky effects that have a positive and a negative and just change how you play the game.
And imagine if these could be put into game to a point where they were easily accessible. You could have all these sets appear and then you really start to, in effect, flesh out and add so many different ways to appreciate RS combat. So, yep. Okay, yep. I like that. I have to ask, you know, it was mentioned with the necromancy stuff about legacy combat and that, you know, you probably don't need legacy combat with necromancy, but mm-hmm. have you played the game with legacy combat before?
Not huge amounts. Things I've done have been like random specific methods that liked legacy combat for a reason or another.
Sure.
Tormented Demons is obviously a popular one where people will go into Legacy. So I've done that. And I did some Rex Matriarchs in Legacy on release, which was quite fun. I like it. I think I like the simple nature of it.
Yeah.
I like it's classically RuneScape, just click and watch, right? I don't think it's something we want to have to support, if that makes sense.
I can see that. I can see that.
It would be good to be in a position where players don't feel like they have to do legacy combat, right?
Yeah.
To enjoy the game.
Yeah.
That's where I want to be, is where we reach the day where we can kind of go, let's just switch off legacy. And no one cared.
Right. I don't know if we'll get there ever, but it's a lofty goal to get there.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. And then finally, where did the name Mod Sponge come from?
Oh, so my RuneScape account name is Evil Sponge. It always has been that or some variant of that. And that came from Doodle Bob, the evil SpongeBob from an episode of SpongeBob.
Oh, okay.
So it's gone from, yeah, Evil Sponge. And then I've kind of just kept that gamer tag out my entire life, and then it's just turned into Mod Sponge.
Nice.
So SpongeBob, particularly the evil doodle version of SpongeBob.
I was wondering if it was something SpongeBob related, because that show has taken on a life of its own after the fact, and even for folks who are older, it's just got so many cultural
iconic
references to it. So
100%.
Okay. Fair enough. Good to hear on that. But that brings us to the end, folks. Thank you for spending your evening with us, Mod Sponge. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Thanks for having me on. It was great. I just want to say I'm a fan of the podcast.
Right on.
I listen to, I think, all of them. There might be one or two I've missed.
All right.
No, yeah, I think you guys are great. So keep up the good work.
All right. See you later. Thanks again. Once again, big, huge thank you to Mod Sponge for joining us for this installment of Behind the Crown. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed that. And if you guys have any ideas about who you'd like to see on a Behind the Crown special, just let us know. We're open to pursuing any angle on this. But this one was definitely a fun one, and I hope you guys enjoyed this pizza and all, as we talked about, amongst other things with that. But with that, we're going to start wrapping the show up right now. We do have a small amount of achievements this week. It's what happens after double XP is gone, and that we only have 6 achievements this week compared to the huge deluge that we had previous week. So we got a nice split here. So congratulations to Farrar, who got 120 Archaeology on the 7th, and Mahin, who got 99 Dungeoneering on the 7th as well.
All right. And then we have Catnap with 99 Firemaking on the 6th, and Ironass with 99 Construction on the 3rd.
Nice.
Ironass also got 99 Cooking on the 3rd, so 2 for 1. And then Queen Rapul got 99 Strength on the 1st of June.
Right on, everybody. Right on. Nice achievements. And Bears, I understand you also have a pick of the week for us here.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited to share this. My girlfriend and I just went to their concert on Tuesday night. It's two friends. They're EDM DJs, and they are releasing their next mix Friday. And it's called Big Booty Mix number 23. So it's not as bad as it sounds. It's
okay, thank you for clarifying.
It's just an hour of them playing jams. And, you know, with good bass, the concert was just absolutely incredible. Usually my girlfriend will listen to them while she's driving to work because it just kind of gets her amped up in the morning. I usually have it going most of the day when I'm not listening to podcasts while I'm working. It's just kind of nice because you don't really get, you know, it's just enough of a song that, you know, you jam to it and then they cut to another one, you jam to that one. It's great. Yeah, I absolutely love them. So highly recommend it.
All right, sounds good. And of course, for people wondering who are watching the video version, I really can't preview any of these musical things on YouTube, audio-wise or video-wise, because we tried that before, and we've got copyright strikes on here. So the best I can do is to say, check it out. The link is in the show notes at update.show. Tanis, is this anything like your kind of music at all, based on what you hear here?
Oh, I listen to some EDM and, you know, I love some booty, you
okay.
know, I'm down.
Yeah. But just to clarify, Paris, you said it's not as bad as you said it sounded, right?
No, I mean, there's a couple cuss words in there. I mean, they're playing popular music. So of course you can kind of
right.
get that. But I mean, it's just a typical EDM remix.
All right. Sounds good. What have we been up to on RS? Let's start with you, Tanis.
I have been preparing for Necromancy.
The Bone Rush.
The Bone Rush, that's right. Throw this guy a bone. Yep, bones of all kinds are quite pricey. I've just been using it as a chance to prepare. It's just made, it's just, you know, having a reason to play is always fun, and whether I keep everything or sell everything, it's just nice to actually be doing something that is worth something. I've actually thinking about doing Corp and Zami. Those bosses are both
Zamorak.
No. Zami, God Worth.
Okay. He scared me there for a second. I was like, what?
Yeah, no. I'm like, wait a minute. No, not that one.
Okay.
Because Spiritual Shields and Subjugation were both named in that
right.
list, and they have been jumping. But those are actually a couple bosses that I can do, so that's kind of fun, you know. Normally, there's no reason to do them, which, go figure, because it's a boss I can do.
Frost Dragon Bone's 32k right now on the GE.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. It's Bone Rush.
And then you can also, you know, farm those in your own player dungeon, like you said.
Yeah, and if you're a guy out there that uses a cannon, please don't forget your cannon. When you go to do Frost Dragons, you know, just PSA, don't forget your cannon. Make sure to take that.
Also, Baby Dragon Bones, 4,900, up from about 3,500 the week before.
Yeah.
Okay, so I see what you're doing here. Are you going to keep them for yourself, or are you going to sell them eventually before they start to dip?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Probably okay. Sell them, but I'm enjoying just, like, this is the kind of combat I like, you know? Like,
fair enough.
I've got my Slayer dungeon set up, and I can basically just go room to room, gathering different bones. You know, I'm using the, I have the add-on from the Ark to the Bone Picker-Upper.
Right.
So, and I'm thinking there might be something that notes them, but I can't remember. I don't know if that's a thing.
Archaeology so. Relic?
Is that what it is? Is it a relic? Okay.
I believe
that's probably,
so.
That's where, yeah, damn, I wish I had that, but I don't have shit for relic. But so I've been using magic notepaper, which is still
cheap. Yeah, that works. For what it is, it's the Death Note relic power. Level 108 for completing Dragonkin 3. All guaranteed bone and ash drops are noted.
Damn.
Which you should have. I mean, you have 120 archaeology and beyond.
I know, but I didn't get relics.
If anything, then it's only Dragon Kid 3, which is 5 artifacts from Orthon.
I might, yeah, that one I might actually have.
Level 106 to 108. Mm. So, definitely doable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. How about you, Bears? What have you been up to?
Besides the AOD and Solak, got back onto my Iron. I wasn't able to play it for basically the last year because I haven't had my computer. So it's been kind of fun getting doing all the quests, hoping to get my first Essence of Finality.
Ooh.
Here in about a week or so, and then hit up some Rago. So we're making progress on that, and then the main is, if it's not being played on, it's AFKing on the second monitor. Usually if some sort of AFK skill, still working towards 5.6, but I will not get it until Necromancy comes out. So
right.
5.8.
Right, fair enough. Yeah, and you know, I think that's the way people go with RS3 these days. You know, you make an Iron Man, or you make an Alt, and then you have your other account focuses on the day-to-day mundane tasks, so to speak, and whatnot, but sounds good. For me, I've been slowly chipping away at the Golden Capon stuff. I decided to go for the Dungeoneering one first, the support one, and I've just been doing that in the hole, believe it or not. I figure that's the easiest way to get that one out of the way, is to just do it there. But aside from that, just dailies on RS3. Old school wise, making good, steady progress towards level 60 attack, because we all know how important a milestone the Dragon Longsword can be when you're leveling up, is in terms of just getting the strength bonus behind it and just, you know, getting a nice chonky weapon to be able to hit things with. So that's the current old school goal. So just kind of alternating back and forth between those two this week, but not too much else to report on that. So I think we can pretty much call this done. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the Mod Sponge Behind the Crown, because, you know, we just love taking the opportunity to sit down with people like Mod Sponge and let them showcase their passion for this game called RuneScape that they work on, they dedicate so much time to, and in his case, actually plays it as well. So big thank you to him for joining us this week. So if you guys want full show notes on that, or any of the other parts of the podcast, you can find those at update.show. You can also subscribe to the podcast. That's the best way to get it. If you want it delivered automatically, just visit update.show / subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Pocket Casts, Spotify, and more. update.show/subscribe. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB, and that's where we post the video versions of the show as well. So, with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.